So we're in chapter 24 of the confession. We went through some of it last time, but let's do a little bit of overview as we're in the middle of this. The previous chapter was on religious worship and oaths and vows, the last two. So we're dealing with the church there. In this one, we're dealing with the state. And then in the next chapter, 25, we're dealing with the marriage. So that's the family. And these are really the three institutions that God has put on this planet to carry out his will among the children of Adam, which I find really interesting that they would put them in that order. There's a lot of logic to it. So let's go through paragraph one again and just kind of read it, then outline it for us. This is chapter 24, paragraph one, the basis of the civil magistrate. And remember, they're living in London, in England, when they write this. So this is not like the Philadelphia Confession, which changed some of the language for America, the colonies, before we became a country. Let alone is this talking about our situation post-Constitution, which kind of blows my mind that, you know, like what Eric just said, we have such a different form of government, unique in all the world, that why in the world would we not update this for our own situation? I think that something that should be considered. But let's read it, try and understand their situation, then we'll make a couple comments about our own. Paragraph one, God, the Supreme Lord and King of all the world, has ordained civil magistrates to be under him, over the people, for his own glory and the public good, and to this end has armed them with the power of the sword for defense and encouragement of them that do good and for the punishment of evildoers. So this gives us the basis of the civil magistrate. In our country, what would the civil magistrate be? Anybody want to give a guess for that one?
The FBI.
The FBI. Better than the CIA, I guess, but not a lot.
Well, that would be the executive branch.
The executive branch.
Their purpose is to enforce the law and
the legislative branch. Yeah, the legislative branch. So, interesting idea. So, I would think the Constitution has to play a huge role in this question. So, I kind of like the idea of the Constitution and the executive branch enforcing the laws of the legislative branch. But the legislative branch also has to be involved in this as well, from our perspective, because they're the ones who make the law. What kind of law should they be making? The confession spells it out. So the basis is that God is the supreme Lord and King of all the world, and all other magistrates, whatever they be, whatever forms they come in, are under him. If they are under him, what does that mean that they are supposed to be doing in relation to his will? Following and obeying it. If they stand outside of that, what does that mean in terms of implication for their basis under a just law? I'm not going to answer the question. It's rhetorical. Now, God has ordained this to be this way so that they will be for three things: over the people, for his glory, and notice the third one, for the public good. They are not ordained for public evil in terms of the revealed will of God. Now, if we want to back up for a minute, there's always two ways to think about the will of God. There's the revealed will and there's his secret hidden will. Nothing is ever outside of his secret hidden will, period. So everything is under his will there. Satan is under his will there. However, God has a revealed will, what he says we are to do, and that is his moral law. And civil government, magistrates, whatever, are under that. That's what our confession teaches. Now, they have been given three powers here. They have the power of the sword. They have the power to defend and encourage the doing of good. They have the power to punish evildoers. So They don't have the power to defend and encourage the doing of evil. God has not given them that power. That is a usurpation of power. They also do not have the power to punish good people. That is a usurpation of power. They've not been granted that power. Very important that you understand that. Just because a government does something, it doesn't mean they've been given the power to do it. They can use the power that they have for evil ends, but that's a different issue. All right, let's go to the second one, because we talked about that one last week. Paragraph 2. It is lawful for Christians to accept and execute the office of a magistrate when called thereunto, in the management whereof, as they ought especially to maintain justice and peace according to the wholesome laws of each kingdom and commonwealth, so for that end they may lawfully now, under the New Testament, wage war upon just and necessary occasions. Now, first of all, notice the distinction here between paragraph 1, which is about simply the civil magistrate. There's nothing about Christian or non-Christian. It's just looking at government as what it is. This one now moves to a Christian's particular relationship to that civil magistrate. So that means paragraph 1 is telling you, whether you're a Christian or not, these are the powers that have been granted and they don't have any other powers. That means non-Christians are under that law of God. And the prophets couldn't be any more clear about this. I mean, Isaiah and Amos have huge portions of prophecies directed at the nations for them being wicked. And they're not, they're Gentiles. Okay? But paragraph 2 is about a Christian. So Christians may be involved in civil government. There's a question that many Christians have brought up, more of these kind of pacifist or Anabaptist sort of things that say Christians should never be involved in government, period, no matter what. Our confession denies that and says, no, they may be involved. Now, they say when called upon to serve. That's interesting, because that's not really what happens for us. You don't get a call unless you're drafted in the military. But that's a kind of a different issue, right? So I ask the question, what about freely entering into a relationship with the government? Because that's what we do. Well, the confession doesn't address this question. But I think the implication has to be yes, because if we are allowed to be involved in it when called upon, if you have the right in our form of government to be involved in the government, why would the answer be no? It wouldn't make any sense. So I believe the answer is yes. We have the right to freely enter into office in our government as Christians. I believe that's what our confession would teach if we were to apply it to today. Now, it gives for what purpose a Christian may be involved in civil government. There's two purposes: to execute the office they are called into, whatever that may be, and second, that they may wage war upon just and necessary occasions. So first one, to execute the office they're called into, they're to do three things. They're to manage that office well. Christians do not have the right to do poorly in their work. They are to maintain justice and peace. What does that imply if you are in a government institution that has become so corrupted that it now maintains wickedness and injustice and violence? What do you as a Christian have the right or obligation to do?
I'm reading a book right now called The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates.
Right.
Which basically, I'm not very far into it, but as I understand it so far, it's saying that as you go down in the levels of magistrates, if you've got somebody who understands their true responsibility, they're to be the roadblock, and it's to stop there. So in other words, they have the obligation as a civil magistrate to stand up to the person above them and say, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, and so it doesn't matter if you're on the bottom rung or the second from the bottom or the second from the top or the very top. That is your obligation as a Christian. Yeah.
That lesser magistrate, it's not only elements within one structure, but it's the smaller jurisdictions.
Yeah.
Federal, state, county, city.
Uh-huh.
When federal falls down and doesn't do their job, then the state can do it. So that state is in good affairs. If they fall down and fail, then the county can ensure that it's done right. And then city, all the way down.
We're seeing examples of that right now in our country.
Yes, we are. So we've been,
Now there's like 8 counties that have decertified the election in the face of their state government.
So we've been brainwashed into really a form of communist thinking that is the absolute centralization of power at the federal level. Whereas our government was set up intentionally so that the power belonged to the lesser magistrates, not to the higher magistrates. People don't understand this, and so they just make it this really simple little either or. Well, the government told me that I have to do this. But my question is, and the lesser magistrates doctrine would be what you would go to, which government? What happens if your state government contradicts your federal government or your county government contradicts your state government? Which government are you supposed to listen to?
Well, we're seeing a lot of that in Weld County there, too. So, we've got Sheriff Steve Reams refusing to, deal with the feds on red flag bills. They're telling them that if you come out here, we're going to arrest you guys.
Well, and guess what? He actually has the power to do that. Because the power resides in the local government.
Yep. See, though, is like, for municipal magistrates and everything like that, the larger, the state or county magistrates will bully them out of everything, like any kind of support. Strangle them down to where you will comply.
I've told you this before, just a funny little example. I will never forget that day and hour that Montana got rid of their speed limit. And I was driving through Montana at 110 miles an hour, and I felt so guilty. And yet I wasn't breaking the law. Well, that didn't last in Montana. It lasts long. You know why? Because the federal government said, we're going to take away your money. And so they said, okay, we'll do whatever you say. We've got so much corruption and bribery going on at the local levels. That's your problem. And this is going on at your door this morning in Erie.
And that's what I wanted to say. If there's big money now in Erie to push forward.
This is not some independent guy who just decided I'm going to go knocking on doors. This is massive money coming from the most highest levels of secrecy that you could ever possibly imagine. Working at the local level to undermine the lesser magistrates. Ed, sorry, you've had your hand up for a while. So,
well, I just mentioned in that book, it comes from, trying to think of the name, Mettenberg Confessions. And where it started with, the doctrine of lesser magistrates started with the Prince of Mettenberg capturing Martin Luther when he was coming back from Worms, and the king of France was going to have him killed, even though he was given free reign. And the lesser magistrate, the Prince of Mettenberg, rescued him because he would not obey the law. And the doctrine of the lesser magistrates was that action, saying, I do not have to comply to the king when it's against the law of God. And today, the way I look at it is DeSantis in Florida, bucking everything the federal government is doing.
Right, right.
He is applying, whether he knows it or not, the doctrine of lesser magistrates.
It's interesting how many of the Puritans wrote letters to the king. To King Edward, from, and then you just fill in a name. These guys were involved as Christians, as pastors, as theologians, to change the government. They were not sitting complicitly by just watching whatever happened. That partly answers the question.
So you think Obama is cognitive enough to actually read letters from
who?
Former right now? Biden? I say
Biden. Right, that's what I thought you said. Let's go.
So local elections are really more important than national elections.
There are people.
I mean, they're all important.
Yes.
Based on all the comments, it sounds like the local sheriff is one of the most powerful positions.
It is. It may be the most powerful position in the whole country.
Yeah.
If you Google it, it's what it tells you. The sheriff is at the highest level of authority. An FBI agent cannot come into a county and do anything without first reporting to a sheriff's office and having permission.
That's why Wyatt Earp was always my hero. Okay, let's read through paragraph 3. Okay, so just summarize here again for Christians. They're to manage their office well. They're to maintain justice and peace. They're to uphold the laws of the kingdom and the commonwealth. And what we said is that wherever the Christian is in that chain of command in the government, it is their job to do that. Their job is to stand up to tyranny. Not to be complicit in tyranny when they see it happening because they got some order from above. Because that person who's got the order from given that order is under God and does not have the authority or the power to do what they're doing. I can't tell you how many people got angry at John MacArthur for refusing masks and having church in California who were Christians. Blows my mind away. Interesting.
But as I'm reading this, that is what we're called to do. And they always want to say it's simple because, well, we're not to judge others. So then they're still using this
right.
in a wrong way.
Yep.
You are called to make a judgment. You're not called and you're not making a judgment unto condemnation. But we are called to do that. They are completely using the scripture in an unbiblical manner when they do that in this regards. Is that not?
1,000,000%. Great example. Being drafted into the jury, which most of us can't stand it, but we have the right. It's the privilege of an American to be able to be on a jury, ideally. Okay, let's go to paragraph 3. Civil magistrates being set up by God for the ends aforesaid subjection in all things lawful things commanded by them ought to be yielded by us in the Lord, not only for wrath, but for conscience sake. And we ought to make supplication and prayers for kings and all in authority, that under them we may live quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. So, an A and a B. A, we have the duty to yield to the civil magistrate. B, why should we be subjected to the civil magistrate as Christians? So let's deal with B first. Why should you be subjected to him? It gives you four reasons. To avoid God's wrath. Well, how does that follow? Well, because God's the one who put them in charge. He ordained it. Second, you do it for your own conscience's sake, which is definitely related to the first one. Third one, you do it so that you can pray for those in authority. And fourth one, you do it so that you can live a quiet and peaceful life in godliness and honesty. That's just coming right out of 1 Timothy. Now, I have a long part of point B3 there that I'm going to bring up here as we look at A. We have the duty to yield to the civil magistrate. To which civil magistrate and under what terms? Well, that's what we all want to know. So let's just look at the 1 and 2 here. Why do we have the duty? Because they've been set up by God. For this end. What end? That's the same question I just asked a second ago. What end? Under what circumstances? Well, that's what paragraphs 1 and 2 are for. Not under all ends. Not under any circumstance. But when they are exercising their power that was given to them by God. If they're not exercising their power given to them by God, how in the world does the confession tell you that you have to be under them for that? Now, we can argue about whether or not a Christian should or not, but I'm just talking about what the confession is saying right here. Because I know, like we said before, brought it up earlier, Christians willfully went to death, especially in the early church, figuring it this is the greatest way that you can honor your Savior who did this for you when he was put to death at the hands of the government. But that's a different question. We're dealing with what the confession allows and what it doesn't allow. Now look at what it says. So long as they're commanding all things lawful. Now, let's ask this question. We have the duty to yield to the civil magistrate. Again, we don't live under the civil magistrate. Let's substitute the word authority for civil magistrate. Now let's ask the question this way. We have the duty to yield to the authority that God has put over us. Is that a little different kind of a question? I think so. Because what is our authority in this country? It's the Constitution of the United States of America. Period. It's not Biden. It's not Trump. It's not Bush. It's not Obama. It's not Polis. It's not any person. It is the Constitution. So when Christians sit here and say, you have to do what the authority tells you to do, because Romans 13, you don't know anything. You need to go take Civics 101. Because who's your authority? God. And then if our Constitution was this incredibly ungodly charter, then it would not be an authority that we could be under, because it would be usurping God's authority. But our Constitution isn't doing that. It's not perfect. It doesn't say everything that could be said about everything. But our Constitution is not an ungodly, anti-Christ authority. It just isn't.
It was written by men that feared God.
Yes, even those who weren't Christians, who were deists, who were fearing that God. Therefore, we have the duty to yield to the Constitution of the United States. That's our highest authority. So, technically speaking, the executive branch and the legislative branch would be lesser magistrates. They might act like they're kings and princes, but they ain't. They're servants, and they are citizens of the United States, just every bit as much as you and I are. That's why this is why we're such a unique project in the history of the world. We are a nation ruled by the people under a constitution.
It's interesting that the lesser magistrates have the ability to actually change the constitution.
They do, yeah. Right. Yeah. So we, the people, are the ones who, you know, of the people, by the people, for the people. That's what our country is. And yeah, they gave the ability to change the Constitution, but it has to be done lawfully. So if you get a bunch of people to come and change something in the Constitution, and that change is not contradicting God's revealed will, then you're obligated to be under it. Or you can do something to change it if you want to. So that's the incredible thing about what we have. If you think something is evil, go change it. Don't complain about it. Go do something. And that gets to our problem of the local government. So let's stop here for a minute, ask questions, and then anybody have any comments or whatever about what we've looked at?
Go ahead.
Well, that's part of what we're going to talk about here in a minute.
something that's striking me is that not only is it right for us as Christians to be involved in that, it almost demands a responsibility for us to be a part of it because of what the leadership, the magistrate, is supposed to be doing, and that's upholding the principles of God. There ain't none of that going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there's several people that claim to be Christians that are in it that I've heard and stuff, but you don't see them fighting for what's right. You don't see them fighting for honoring God and glorifying God. According to what looks like here, we almost have a responsibility as Christians to be that.
Yeah, and especially because, so it talked about what happens if you are called upon.
Right.
But what we said is that you're not called upon in anything except jury duty.
Right.
For a government.
This is it.
The government doesn't work, though, unless people go into it.
Since you have a civic duty, you can make the argument that you're called upon just by being born.
By being born a citizen, yeah. You could. I don't think government life is for everybody. So.
No, but you're still...
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily government involvement, but because we have government that is local, those are your neighbors, and therefore you have influence that we have a duty to influence.
What is the call upon? Because in what we're in light of right now, is that not a call in and of itself?
Well, yeah, I think that's kind of what he's saying. Yeah, I mean, it would be more of a formal called upon, like, I don't know, John Knox being called upon by the Queen of Scotland to, you are going to be my right-hand man or something, and like, what am I supposed to do with that? Okay, I guess I will. Carl, you have had your hand up for a while.
Two things. Part of what we're discussing, I don't remember the founder who said, but he said it's our duty as citizens to prefer Christians to lead over.
Mm.
So the understanding at that time was, you can elect anybody, but per our Constitution, it's preferable for us to vote only for Christians. Part B of that is what we've seen most recently, and it goes back to last week's discussion about vows and oaths. All of our elected officials, the first thing they do is take an oath of office, and they put their hand on a Bible, except recently.
Yep.
They've been permitted to put their hand on a Quran or whatever else they think the deed is a moral authority for them. And that, again, messes with the intent of the founders, I would think, to stay close to the standard God may not be so many of these confessions.
We're running into that issue that the scripture talks about, you know, the wicked freely strut it out when one of the vile is honored by men.
I want to give you something to think about. This is the codification to me of the lesser magistrate. This is a Supreme Court ruling. The general misconception is that any statute passed by legislatures bearing the appearance of law constitutes the law of the land. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any statute to be void must be in agreement. It is impossible for a law which violates the Constitution to be valid. Their statement was, all laws which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. So there's the marching orders to the lesser magistrates.
What is that from?
What
is that from?
This is the opinion on Marbury versus Madison, very early on in the life of our country, in 1803.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court said, if it's in opposition to any part of the Constitution, on the surface, it's null and void. So any lesser magistrate below that is obligated at that point to say, no, I will not enforce that law.
Right.